On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers and top Republican lawmakers met Friday for the first time in 6 months on COVID relief legislation. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told WKOW-TV.
There are all new issues from where we were in the spring. Of course, we know some strategies work. We know some others have fallen significantly behind where we want. And that's why I think it's up to us not to rehash old battles or try to score political points.
They called the meeting productive. Evers produced a $541 million package of COVID measures. What do you want out of state government in this crisis? What is urgently needed? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Hi, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. So after months of not meeting or talking, the governor and the Republican leaders met, which is a step forward toward addressing the COVID crisis. What happened at Friday's meeting?
So we got some pretty positive feedback from both the governor and legislative leaders about Friday's meeting. As you mentioned, it was the first one in quite a while between the governor and leaders. They used words like positive, productive. I think it was notable that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and the new Senate Majority Leader, Devin LeMahieu, said that there were things that they agreed with the governor on. They noted that there were things that they didn't agree with him on. Perhaps not surprisingly, we know they've had some disagreements about COVID-19 policies in the past, obviously. But it sounds like there's some common ground there, and they're looking to work on it.
Yeah, where was the common ground specifically? Where did they find some agreement?
So we don't have that kind of specific yet, unfortunately, but we know some of the things that the speaker in particular pushed back on after the governor's package of proposals came out. He said one thing that he didn't see getting traction in the assembly was a proposed moratorium on evictions in Wisconsin. In response to the pandemic, he said that he didn't think that that was an appropriate response. So we know that's a concrete example of something they don't agree on.
What is their timeline for talking again? Do we know?
We don't. So we know that the conversations about, you know, having COVID-19 legislation, a second bill, legislators already passed one COVID-19 bill in mid-April of this year. So quite a while ago, obviously. Conversations about this have been kind of swirling for the past several months, right? And it's been obviously a slow moving train. They haven't had those meetings. This was the first meeting in a while. When Speaker Voss has spoken about it, he has said previously that he wouldn't expect there to be legislation on the floor of either chamber until the next session begins, which is in January. And obviously January is getting ever closer. So, you know, we're getting kind of in a tight window here where the current legislature only has about a month left for them to meet if they're going to do so about this. So it's a pretty compressed time frame if they want to get it done before the new legislature is sworn in early January.
We're talking about the state's response to COVID with Laurel White. She's Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. You can join in what you see out of lawmakers right now in this crisis, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Tom in Madison with thoughts. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was just thinking it's a nice thing that Robin Voss and the Republicans are finally meeting with Tony Evers, but let's not give them too much praise, because they're the people that walked out of the emergency session after 15 minutes and gaveled out. They're the people that have been blocking the mask mandate statewide for months. They still have no plan whatsoever. They have a list of priorities, but that's it. And Robin Voss, last time I talked to his office, is still talking about the fact that he will not support a mask mandate no matter what. So I don't see anything going on at all. Republicans nationwide haven't offered a health care plan since the Nixon administration in 1969. So I'm kind of loath to believe that.
All right, Tom, thank you for that. Is it clear, Laurel, what they're working toward?
It isn't clear. I mean, you asked when the next meeting is, when they might be meeting on the floor. I feel like these things are all very kind of amorphous right now.
Squishy.
We don't know. Squishy. That's a great word for it. Very squishy. Look at me using 10,000 amorphous. So I think we're just going to have to wait and see. I think that the fact that they did meet and we got positive feedback from all parties involved last week is a huge step forward for this, but there are a lot of hurdles.
Well, let's look at something that's not as squishy. Evers put forward a package of 19 bills totaling $541 million for pandemic response. What are your top line takeaways of this package?
So I think the big ones that stuck out to me were things that sounded pretty familiar from what we had in mid-April from the last COVID bill. These are kind of extensions of things that had already been done, like lifting that 1 week waiting period for unemployment benefits in Wisconsin, some changes to state insurance laws aimed at ensuring that insurers cover COVID-19 testing and treatment. There was that provision about evictions that I mentioned a couple minutes ago, where there would be a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures for a certain amount of time as the pandemic continues. And then some changes to things like how pharmacists fill prescriptions, workers' comp claims in COVID-19, and standardized testing for public schools being suspended for an amount of time.
Going back to the first thing you mentioned on unemployment, wanting to suspend the 1 week waiting period for unemployment insurance, and that would be through the end of next year. Currently, is it true the waiting period is set to go back into effect at the end of this year?
I think so. Yeah. So that's what happened in the first COVID-19 package, was they suspended it for that set amount of time, right? Not really knowing how long this pandemic was going to go on, how it was going to evolve. And so this is just a refresher, basically a proposed refresher to say we still need this this change, this temporary lift in place because of where we are kind of socially and economically in the pandemic.
So when you looked at these priorities, and specifically here on education, waiving student assessments and school report card requirements for the 2020-2021 school year, what do you make of that in this package?
Well, that's something that the governor's talked about before. Obviously, he has a strong history being the former education secretary, Department of Public Instruction head for Wisconsin. He knows a lot about this stuff and is very engaged with it. And it's just something that his administration has deemed is appropriate for the kind of educational climate that we've got right now in Wisconsin. You know, obviously students and teachers are working in a different way than they have before. And so just kind of lifting that testing is something that he has said is important to do, so as not to, you know, penalize or kind of sort of apply the standards of a different life and a different time to what folks are going through right now.
We're getting up to speed on developments at the Capitol as Wisconsin is in a grave fight with COVID. Laurel White is WPR's state Capitol reporter. What do you think it will take to slow the spread in our state? Where should Wisconsin put its remaining CARES Act federal relief money before the end of the year? What do you think of lawmakers and the governor meeting over the phone for the first time in 6 months? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Laurel White here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump paid for recounts in Dane and Milwaukee counties. The recount is underway. Election workers raise their right hand and are sworn in Friday at the Wisconsin Center in downtown Milwaukee.
Swear and affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
That, courtesy of Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Trump campaign claims widespread fraud. What do you want to know about how the recount is being handled, the timeline, what happens next? It's 800-642-1234. We have WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White as our guide. Let's bring in another call. Now Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning. I'd like to talk about evictions. Some people need to be evicted. Okay, there are some drug houses and subsidized housing and other organized crime. Okay, they need to give CGB funding to cities and counties so they can start building rooming houses. Okay, and we have to stop the neglect of these non-for-profit subsidized housing that have mice, bugs, and other things that need fixing. They need to hire the poor to do it.
Mary Kay, what would you like to see the legislature do as COVID, rages on, and in terms of eviction when people are out of work?
Well, when people are out of work, they can start fixing up some of the subsidized housing they get paid for anyway.
Mary Kay, thanks for that. Laurel, you know, the Department of Health Services would be allowed to issue an order prohibiting evictions and foreclosures in this package. What do you see there?
So I think it's really unlikely that this proposal is going to move forward. That was one of the few things that Speaker Voss specifically called out when he had a press availability last week that he doesn't support, and said he doesn't believe that there's support for that within the Republican Assembly caucus. So I don't see that that's going to get anywhere near the governor's desk for a signature.
Let's bring in Charlotte in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlotte.
Oh, hey, I was just wondering with the CARES Act or any act, are there any provisions for mental health for a lot of the children that are having, you know, issues? I'm hearing that a lot of kids are depressed about not being able to go to school.
Yeah, are funds being directed from the federal dollars toward mental health, Laurel?
That's a good question, and one that I don't know off the top of my head. That would be something that we'd have to look into. I know that mental health has been something that the governor has mentioned in the past, and the governor has allocated almost all of that federal CARES Act money at this point. All of that has to be spent by December 31st. So digging into what the CARES Act went to in Wisconsin, I would not be surprised if some of it went to mental health services because the governor has brought that up. But I don't know for sure off the top of my head.
All right, let's bring in Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. What would you like to say about ICU beds?
Yeah, back on March 20th, Andrea Palm was quoted on NPR as saying we had 2,500 ICU beds and that we needed to ramp that up because we would have a second wave in fall. That was a direct quote from Andrea Palm on NPR. If I look at the WH website right now, we have, I think, about 1,500 ICU beds, even though we got millions upon millions upon millions of dollars from the federal government to increase our ability to handle COVID. What happened to the money?
So, Steve, in wondering about the diminishing number of ICU beds that he's seeing, do you have insight there, Laurel?
I don't. I think what I would say about that is that we know that the state effort in terms of increasing bed capacity has gone to things like creating that overflow facility in Milwaukee. Now, that's not for ICU patients. That's for individuals who are in a much less severe situation, but it's taking them out of hospital settings to open up some of the beds in hospital settings for other individuals. That's what I know we can point to in terms of state investment for expanding beds. State investment in expanding ICU beds is something that I'm not sure what has happened in that regard.
Have you heard any talk about expanding the number of field hospitals?
I know that there is a plan that could be tapped by state officials to build another field hospital like the one we have in Milwaukee in Madison. But it hasn't reached the level of exploring that more concretely at this point. But I know the plans have been sketched out so officials can kind of begin that process quickly if they need to.
And we're talking with Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and looking at the state response to COVID with your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. Laurel, let's look at the recount situation. You've been closely following the partial recount, which started Friday in Madison and Milwaukee. Can you set the scene for us? What is the Madison recount like?
So I spent some time at the Madison recount on Friday morning. It's a very different sort of atmosphere than our presidential recount in 2016, which I also covered. They're using the Monona Terrace this year in Madison, which is, some folks might know, a big convention center. They're using a massive room on one of the lower levels of the Monona Terrace. They have a lot of long tables set up, plexiglass barriers between election officials and observers. And there are a lot of observers. Really, it's incomparable to what we saw in 2016. I spoke with Monona Terrace officials, and they said they didn't have an exact estimate on the number of observers who had come into the facility as of, you know, kind of early afternoon on Friday, but they said it was at least a couple hundred, which I think is very safe to say, particularly supporters of the president there to watch the retallying of ballots, and if they want to raise some challenges to ballots that they think shouldn't be counted.
Would any observers talk with you?
They would not. So I tried. I gave it a good college try to kind of walk around and safely chat with people, you know, keeping our distance, and everyone had masks on at the facility, as is required by election officials. I got some pretty strongly worded no's from some of the Trump supporters that were there saying they didn't want to speak to me. One woman did start speaking with me, and then her friends kind of came in and hushed her and kind of cut things off. And I heard them say, we're not supposed to talk to anyone. So I think the policy there, they've been instructed not to engage with press. And so it's really difficult, if, you know, impossible, basically, to kind of get the perspective of the folks that have taken time out of their day, out of their lives, to go down and be in this big cavernous room at the Monona Terrace to watch vote retallying.
You know, the AP said that the Milwaukee County recount is taking place, and it's turned pretty bitter and chaotic at times, with observers slowing down the process. Do you have any insights there, or did you see that at all in Madison?
So this is what happens there, Kate. When the morning starts, or when the morning started, this is concretely what happened on Friday. The Trump campaign lodged some big complaints, some sort of sweeping complaints that applied to a lot of ballots in three major categories. And so officials weighed those responses of whether they were going to throw the ballots out or not. In both Milwaukee and Madison, the boards of canvass rejected the Trump organization, the campaign's request to throw out these big categories of ballots, but they had a standing objection applied to any ballots that fell within those categories. So that kind of took away a lot of the ballot challenges that folks might make over the course of the day, because kind of the big things the Trump campaign was targeting were already taken care of, right? Mm. So the room that was left for these individual observers to challenge things are other issues that weren't covered by these big categories. And we definitely saw that happening on a case-by-case basis with ballots. So as those observers are up on the other side of the plexiglass and election officials are going ballot by ballot, an observer can say, show me that ballot more carefully, more closely. I think I see something wrong with that. I object to it. And then the election worker puts that in a different pile. In Madison, there was a pink post-it on top of the pile that said objections, and they just kind of go about it that way. I didn't see that happening in a contentious way or in an incredibly widespread way when I was at the Madison facility. That wasn't the case in Milwaukee. We heard that there were a lot of challenges, especially as the weekend progressed, where there were so many of those individual challenges, it was really slowing down the proceedings.
we're on the brink of a COVID vaccine. Has there been any talk among lawmakers or the administration about how the rollout will happen in Wisconsin?
That's something that state officials have been talking about for several weeks now, kind of getting this infrastructure in place for distributing a COVID vaccine. So we know that it's absolutely on their radar. It's something that they've been paying attention to, but we don't have, a concrete plan out as of right now that's completely set in stone for that.
Laurel, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Representative John Nygren of Marinette. We'll get his take on COVID relief legislation, what Republicans aim to do, how to tackle the unemployment claims backlog. What do you want to ask the lawmaker? 800-642-1234. State Cap continues with Representative Nygren after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers and top Republican lawmakers met Friday for the first time in 6 months on COVID relief measures. The parties called the meeting productive. Evers told WKOW-TV.
There was no shouting or screaming. We were just pretty much answering questions and looking forward to a solution.
What do you want from your lawmakers at this point in the crisis? What is a crucial next step? State it here, 800-642-1234. Representative John Nygren's district includes Marinette, Oconto, and Suamico in the northeast part of our state. He co-chairs the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. Representative Nygren, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Good to be with you.
How would you characterize the meeting between top Republican lawmakers and the governor Friday?
Oh, I definitely characterize it as positive. It's a first step. There seems to be progress towards or agreement towards extending some of the provisions that were in the first relief bill that was passed back in April. I think that's a positive step. But I guess getting people together is always a positive, especially when there's a lot of disagreements. And this was a much-needed conversation that should have taken place a long time ago.
You know, we're on the cusp of a vaccine, and throughout this pandemic, Republicans and Democrats have not demonstrated a spirit of cooperation in our state. But vaccine rollout is all about cooperation and coordination. How can we trust that the vaccine's distribution here in Wisconsin will not be undermined by the political gamesmanship we're seeing among Wisconsin politicians?
Well, I'm not sure I would call it political gamesmanship. There's definitely been trust issues. If you remember back to the spring when the folks all met together, leadership and from the legislature and the governor's office, they actually recorded the governor's office recorded the conversation. Things have been played out in the media rather than having conversations, face to face. So I think there's definitely a trust issue. But as I stated earlier, when there's been a desire from both sides to come together to get something done, we got that bill done in April. I believe it passed almost unanimously through both houses, and those were things that both the governor's office and the legislature agreed on. And so let's have those conversations. Let's stop playing politics with this. I heard a lot about this during the campaign cycle about how, what has the legislature done? Well, finally, actually, somebody from the media actually asked Governor Evers, what would you like them to do a few weeks ago? And he had nothing. So the legislature typically either works with the administration on significant health issues like this to actually expect us to know what the daily needs are of DHS, is a little unreasonable. But sitting down together, I think we can come up with a plan that actually will benefit the people of Wisconsin.
The governor declared a new public health emergency Friday and extended the statewide mask mandate, emergency order number one. Do you support these orders?
Well, I think the orders are one thing, meaning the desire to protect the people of Wisconsin and people to be safe and to reduce the loss of life that we're seeing in our state and our nation. First of all, I support the CDC guidelines. I wear a mask. I wash my hands. We're avoiding large groups. My family's doing something different for Thanksgiving this year, keeping it to a small, close-knit group. Those things are all positive. But the people of Wisconsin, you know, especially when you get in more rural areas, these are freedom-loving people who just simply want to be left alone by government, dictate from the governor whether it's legal or not. I mean, that there is some question to whether it is, and I think that'll be handled in the courts. That I don't believe that's the answer. However, Republicans and Democrats coming together saying these are the right steps for us to do to protect ourselves, protect our neighbors, I think that's something we all can do. Yet, it doesn't seem, because of some of these trust issues we've had in the past, doesn't seem like we're quite there yet. Mm.
Patrick is with us from Richland County now. Hi, Patrick. What would you like to add?
Hey, good morning. Great show. Kate, say, I would like to ask Representative Nygren, is wearing a mask in public, like when you go into Quick Trip, for instance, is that the best way of stopping the spread, by wearing a mask? Yes or no?
Well, I mean, I believe that the healthcare folks will tell you it's one of the important steps, but it's not something that's going to completely protect you.
Well, so if it doesn't completely protect us, then do like the Republicans and don't do anything? Voss just said, hey, there's never going to be a state mandate, and you guys have been in court trying to overturn it, and you got Republican sheriffs telling people that they're not going to enforce it. I mean, you guys are like pro-COVID.
Okay, well, Patrick, let's pause there. Should Republicans back litigation of these public health measures that Evers is pushing in the state Supreme Court?
So the bottom line here is, let's make this some other issue, right? If the governor takes a step that is clearly illegal, should the legislature ignore the fact that it's illegal? I knocked on a lot of doors, talked to even Republicans that didn't think, they basically thought that we should leave the mask mandate alone, even if it was illegal. That's not our charge. We are charged with holding up the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, when we begin to basically shirk those responsibilities, that's when we get in trouble. Let's not do, as I said earlier, let's not do things that are illegal. Let's come together and find a solution rather than, you know, we don't live in a monarchy. We live in a legislative environment here in Wisconsin. Let's work together to find that solution.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing state politics and the response to COVID with Representative John Nygren of Marinette. You can join in. How do you want to see lawmakers addressing the pandemic? What does a relief package need? What does it look like to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jody is joining us from Monona. Hi, Jody. What is your perspective?
I guess my perspective is you have healthcare workers out there working 12 hours a day, at their wits' ends, and we can't get, why are our legislatures not working like that? To not be in session for 6 months, and the mask mandate is a help to our health crisis right now. So I just don't understand how our legislatures can get away with not getting together, not trying to work with each other. I mean, it's great to talk about.
And Jody, I want to specifically look at the healthcare worker staff shortage, which is dire here in Wisconsin. Representative Nygren, what could legislation or lawmakers do about that healthcare shortage right now?
Sure. We've had conversations about basically finding ways to streamline the opportunity for people maybe who don't necessarily have specific licensure in certain areas. You know, could we have folks that may not have, you know, I mean, we all understand that education and training and all those things are important, but are there jobs that actually people could step into and fill a gap so that we could actually use our best and our brightest in the areas, you know, treating patients? Those are type of things that we are looking at. But the bottom line is I don't disagree with what's been said. We need to have fewer people coming into our healthcare system, so we need to do the things that are right. I think the argument here is that, you know, that obviously mask mandates and other things, while they may be in court, they're in place. They have been in place for several months, and yet we've continued to see cases grow and grow and grow. So let's not think that just because the mask mandate constitutionality or legality has been challenged, that actually has hindered healthcare in Wisconsin. There's bigger systematic problems that we both need to address together, and let's take the politics out of it.
I want to switch gears here and look at another system problem, which is unemployment. And unemployment claims, there is still a backlog. You've been very critical of the administration and the Department of Workforce Development on this. How do you want to see it changed?
Well, first and foremost, I think we need to find, actually have a conversation about something that will actually work. We've actually been providing suggestions to the administration. This is an administrative function. Once again, the politics of things that we know, we just went through a very controversial election cycle. We're still kind of struggling with it. We know the politicization has been there. But rather than us being Republicans and Democrats fighting with each other, we've tried to provide suggestions to the administration on steps that could be taken to, reduce the backlog. Initially, it was the call center didn't have the volume. Back in April, we allowed the governor's administration to basically move any employee, from within state government to be able to get into the call center and help. We suggested that we extend call center hours. Initially, I think they were working 7:30 to 3:30. I think it took several weeks. Finally, they are at 7:30 to 5. They could go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if that would help. But it seems to be that the systematic challenges are more in adjudication of the problems, and the governor's administration has talked about technology issues, yet there has been no desire, no proposals to be able to address the technology. We're trying to check off the things that they have said, because the administration knows the problems. They work there day in and day out.
But how many more hundreds of people do you want to staff DWD? They've added 681 call center workers through July. They've paid out more than $1 million in overtime, 10 times the levels spent last year. How many more people do you need there, and where will that money come from?
Well, first of all, they need as many as they need to get the job done. If you're somebody who has been waiting for months to get their claim processed, and we've learned over the time that it's not just call center, now it's adjudication. There haven't been a lot of new people added in adjudication to address that backlog. So that, I would say, should be the focus now. When it comes to resources, if there's dollars that are needed, they got $2 billion from the federal government that had no legislative oversight. There's dollars that have been available. We just need to prioritize the things that are most important. And people who oftentimes, these are people who have never been unemployed in their life, being able to pay their bills, pay their mortgages, and put food on the table for their families, that has to be a priority.
We're talking with Representative John Nygren about what to do about this raging virus in our state, what lawmakers will decide to do next. How do you want to see the state cracking down on adherence to public health recommendations? What is your message to lawmakers? Are you a frontline healthcare worker? Brief us on what you see. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Representative John Nygren, who is on the line. He co-chairs the state's Budget Writing Committee. We're looking at the fallout from COVID and what lawmakers plan to do next. Let's bring in Cole, who's joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole. What would you like to say? Hey, Cole, are you there? And I don't think Cole is with us. Let's bring in Jan in La Crosse. Hi, Jan. You're on with Representative Nygren.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I don't understand over all these months why other state governors are able to put in a mask mandate and make it, and it's legal. And yet our governor puts in a mask mandate and the Republican legislature takes him to court and overturns it. Our neighboring states of Minnesota and North Dakota have mask mandates. Why is it that it's legal there but not in our state, according to the Republican legislature?
Representative Nygren.
Well, first of all, every state has different laws on the books. That's just, you know, that's just difference, you know, different situations from different states. First of all, the mask mandate has not been overturned. There were other steps that the governor took early, the stay-at-home order, other things that were overturned early on. But actually, the mask mandate is still in court right now. You know, I think that's a perfect example, though, that let's talk about what other states have done. Minnesota, for example, we get compared to Minnesota a lot, similar size, you know, population, demographics, very, very much similar states. Yet, so they've had a lot more restrictive policies in place over the last, you know, 6-8 months, yet their cases right now are similar to ours, if not higher. So this should not be about what government can do to reduce the spread of the virus. This should be about what we as individuals of Wisconsin can do to reduce the spread of the virus, protect our families, protect our friends, protect our neighbors. You know, I think changing that conversation will go a long way towards actually keeping people safe. If you expect government to keep us safe, I think we're going to be seriously disappointed.
Jan, thanks. Let's bring in Kenneth in Janesville with a question. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Good morning. What's the situation regarding renters? I haven't heard too much about that lately, and that there's a whole lot of people that cannot afford the rent.
Rent assistance is the question that Kenneth is asking, Representative.
Well, I first of all, I know there was the executive order on evictions early on. I know the governor has talked about doing something, basically extending that. You know, but first of all, I think we need to find a kind of a happy medium here, whether it be you know, I think the governor is hoping for more federal assistance to be able to address these type of issues. But the reality is, if you're the person who actually owns the apartment or the home, and you're actually renting it, you know, that rental income that you get actually feeds your family too. So simply saying that we are going to cease and desist from, you know, any type of evictions without finding a way to actually keep both sides protected, I think is you're choosing sides, picking winners and losers there. So those conversations, I think, need to take place. I think the governor is hopeful that more federal resources come. Yet, you know, we know Wisconsin, we are required like most every state to do a balanced budget. The federal government is not, you know, but that's going to require probably more borrowing and more printing of money at the federal level. So, you know, we have to be careful, you know, any direction that we go.
Well, let's look at the package that the governor put forth last week, 19 bills, $541 million. What are your takeaways? Is there anything enticing in there?
Well, I think many of the initiatives in that bill are things that we already have supported, meaning when we voted back in April. And that's a positive. I think there's a willingness to accept many of those same things. I think one of the major concerns, however, is that the governor is asking for over $500 million in ongoing funding. And what that I mean by ongoing is that's not just one time when dealing with the pandemic. That will be base building. Every single budget, it will be there. It will likely grow in the future. So at a time when the governor's office themselves have said that we're facing about a $2 billion revenue shortfall, as somebody involved with the state budget, that's concerning to me. So I think there's conversations that can be had about extending you know, some of those provisions that we've already supported, yet we also need to look at the long-term financial health of the state as well and not commit dollars that may not be there in the future. One of the biggest takeaways for me in this conversation has been, okay, go back to last budget. You know, Governor Evers signed a budget that the Republicans made a lot of changes in the legislature on. He signed it into law. I actually think that was probably the best thing that he's done since he's been elected governor. Despite the fact that his initial budget, he had over $2 billion in additional spending, over another $1 billion in taxes increases, we actually pulled back considerably. And while we passed a lot of increases for things like K-12 education, health care, et cetera, at the end of the day, it was a conservative-based budget. Without that, if he wouldn't have signed that into law and we rather would have gone down the pathway he wanted us to, today we'd be in a conversation where we're looking at cutting schools. We wouldn't have the resources to help the health services of our state. So conservative, reasonable steps should be the direction now, just like they were a year ago.
We're talking with State Representative John Nygren about the state budget response to COVID. He was recently reappointed to serve as co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. You can join in 800-642-1234. The State Department of Administration, DOA, on Friday released a new report projecting a state general fund balance of more than $1.2 billion at the end of the current fiscal year. How do you feel about the state budget picture and revenue projections?
Well, I think I go back to what I just said. I mean, if we wouldn't have, so the governor proposed $2 billion more in spending, if they're projecting a $1.2 billion surplus, you know that would be a negative then, right, if we actually would have funded all the desires that the governor had asked for in his budget. So I think that...
But we have a rainy day fund that is at its highest level, you know, since
once again,
into
that's
history.
Because of conservative budgeting over the last 8 years. So you know, there's been a lot of gnashing of teeth over tough decisions that have made been made in Wisconsin over the last 8 years. Yet I would point out that that actually has set us up for a situation where we have flexibility. So so the proposal or projections that the governor's office is talking about does not, you know, take into consideration what the requests are going to be coming into the next budget. And that's something that I think needs to be talked about as well. I believe they're at $1.6 billion more for education. The rest of the administration, I think, asked for another $700 million. So, you know, there's going to be tough decisions ahead.
At what point do you dip into the rainy day fund?
Well, I think that's a conversation that needs to be had. And it typically starts with the administration. We have not touched the rainy day fund since I've been around. As a matter of fact, when I first started on the committee, I think we had $1 million in the rainy day fund. Now we have over $800 million. So once again, provides flexibility. At some point in time, I think those conversations will be had. But, you know, the governor has had $2 billion in federal funds to this point. There hasn't been a need, and that's a positive thing. It puts us in a good position going forward that if we need it, it's there.
Your colleague, Speaker Voss, has directed a committee with subpoena powers to investigate how the election was administered and the results. Why are you doing this?
Well, first of all, I think it's important that everybody feel that the outcome was fair and just. And whether it's legitimate or some people believe it's illegitimate, looking into the problems that did take place throughout our state, I think is more of an action of transparency, and that's a positive thing for us. Do I believe that we'll see significant changes in the outcome? No, I don't. But why should we not use transparency to give people that sense of comfort that this election was handled appropriately and fairly?
What will the investigation entail?
Well, I think they're looking at some of the concerns that people have addressed. We're looking for people that have. I mean, I've had people call me with issues that they believe took place at their local polling place. The committee is going to look at those individual situations and provide a level of transparency that may not exist right now, so that at the end of the day, that we all can feel good about the outcome. Maybe not happy with the outcome, but feel that it was handled fairly.
Representative Nygren, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you always.
John Nygren, Republican State Representative, co-chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee representing parts of Northeast Wisconsin. Just ahead, we talk about the risks of gathering for the holidays during this pandemic. What are your Thanksgiving plans? What do you want to ask an infectious disease doc? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.